be there.
Hi.
Ah, and it's, wow, there's a lot of you. This is awesome. I'm so excited to be here. And as Christina said, I'm your chair of Region 7, which means I serve all of you. And to see all of the service that, you know, everyone that came here that helped put this on, who came here to be, you know, in attendance, it strengthens all of OA and it strengthens Region 7, and it warms my heart to see you all here. So I'm going to tell you my story. I'm going to talk a little bit about unity, hopefully. My life is a little bit, I was thinking on the way here about how busy my life is. And I'm like, you know what, it feels almost a little bit unmanageable. And then I started thinking about what my life looked like when it was unmanageable, really, truly unmanageable. And I started laughing because even though today it feels a little unmanageable to think about where, how far I've come and where it used to be, it is laughable. today I'm busy, and I'm not always busy, but this just happens to be a busy season right now for me. And, you know, I had these grand ideas that I was going to have my notes, and I was going to, you know, look up what unity meant in the dictionary and tell you all about it. And that didn't happen. So, you know what I did? I asked God to give me the words today. And that never fails me. It hasn't failed me in almost 12 years. So, I came into OA April 22nd, 2002. My first meeting was actually in South Jersey. I believe it was in Voorhees or somewhere over there. My sister-in-law was in program, and she lived in New Jersey, and she took me to my first meeting. I have not been back to that meeting since, but I went to that meeting, and I knew I'd found the answer for me. I knew that what you guys had, I wanted, I needed, and I was desperate. I'll tell you my story. You'll hear how desperate I was, enough to do whatever you told me to do. And I did what you told me to do. And so today I have 11 some years of abstinence. I'm maintaining about around 140 pound weight loss. And I have a whole bunch of pictures, and there's too many of you to pass the whole book around. I wouldn't get hardly anywhere. So I'm just going to pass this one picture, which was 5 months before I came into program. You can see, you know, the sadness, the desperation, and the fat, the 140 extra pounds that I carried around with me. I'll pass that around. So, who's timing me? Where's my time? No one? I'll talk all day. Okay, I'll do that. Okay, thank you. Okay. Let's see, I'll go way back. I'm a twin. I have a twin brother, and he's not a compulsive overeater. And so from a very early age, I knew that what I did with food was different than what other people did, what my brother did. My mom is also not a compulsive overeater. And so I knew from an early age that what I did with food was not, you know, what she did. And it always bothered me. I always felt different. I always felt separate. I always felt like something was wrong with me. Today, I believe that even if it wasn't compulsive overeating, I would have felt that way anyway. It's just part of my disease, part of my makeup. Food was my solution. You know, I have this disease of addiction, and food was just one of my solutions. It was my main solution. It was my first solution. Thankfully, today it's not my solution at all. I was listening to speakers on the way here, and one of the topics was there is a solution. I'm so glad I have a solution today that's not food, and that I know what it is. And so, you know, from the, you know, in my pictures here, I start from, you know, about age 7 or 8. And I was always a normal body size until about, you know, 18 or 19. But that's, you know, what you saw on the outside was not what was happening on the inside and not indicative of what was going on inside of me. I went on my first diet at age 9. At that age, I was already, you know, and had the mindset that something was wrong with me, and if I could change how I looked on the outside, that everything else would fall into line. You know, that all of the little boys at school, and I do mean little because I was 5'7" at age 9, would all, you know, suddenly think that I was great and not 3 feet taller than them. And, you know, all the other girls, you know, would think I was so cool, and my mom would stop looking at me and ask me, why did I want to eat so much? And so I went on this diet, and I went on, that was my first of probably hundreds of diets, from age 9 until age 32 when I came in here. And just to think about how sad I was and how lost I was and how, hurt and misunderstood. I thought I was misunderstood. It breaks my heart today to think about that, because I have two boys today. They're 19 and 17. And as they grew up, you know, as they're still growing up, but as they hit, you know, some of those milestones that I, you know, really deeply remember, it just broke my heart to think of them, you know, when they were 9, to think, oh my gosh, imagine if they went on their first diet and they were already, you know, had that head going at that age. Like, they were, like, 9 years old is just a baby. And so, you know, I went through, you know, my adolescent years, my teenage years, trying everything I could to fit in. You know, I was a true, true chameleon. Not just trying to diet and trying to, you know, fit in, do that kind of stuff, but everything about me. You know, when I came in here, I had to change who I was at my core. It wasn't just that I was eating too much. You know, I had a very sick head. And so my whole life I spent as this chameleon, you know, whichever group I was with at the time, that's who I would be, you know. And so, as, you know, Facebook got popular and reconnected with people from high school and stuff, and people would say, oh yeah, you were so popular, you knew everyone. Well, yeah, because whoever I was with, I melded myself to be with them. It's like, oh, you guys are in the band, I can be in the band. Oh, you guys are stoners, so I could be a stoner. Oh, you guys are in sports, okay, I'll come do that. You know, and all the time, I had no idea who I really was. You know, it's like I'm a very keen observer, and I pick up pretty quick. And so I would just watch. You know, I would watch and say, "Oh, that's what they're doing. Okay, I can, you know, watch for, you know, half an hour, and then I could fit right in." Just that loneliness that comes with that, and the lies and deceit that come with that. I can remember physically that feeling of, you know, not just, thinking that I had to look behind me, but physically, constantly looking over my shoulder before I would say things, because I had to make sure that if I was with this group, that group, you know, if I was with group A, that group B wasn't behind me listening to the lies I was saying to group A. And that's how I lived my life. Like, what kind of peace could I have possibly had? No wonder I went to food. No wonder I had to go sedate myself when I was by myself. One of the things I learned when I came into OA was, you know, if something was going on and bothering me, if I had a problem or an issue, you know, in one thing, one area, it was never just in one area. You know, I would talk to my sponsor and say, oh, I'm having this little problem at work where I can't get along with people. And she was like, oh, really? So it's just at work, huh? You know, that was true throughout everything I did. It's never just, for me, it's never, you know, that small. It's always like, okay, if I have this pattern and this problem, it's everywhere. You know, I got to see, like, how those lies, how my life was just one big lie. And I can still remember, like, you know, in those times when I would be alone and by myself and somewhat coherent, just thinking, like, oh my gosh, if people really knew who I really was. Well, first of all, I didn't know who I really was. I had no idea couple of years before program when the internet started getting really popular, and they had all these quizzes like who are you, and what's your favorite color, and all this other stuff. I used to take them, all of them, to try to figure out who I was. Like, okay, what kind of personality do I have? Am I extroverted or am I introverted? Just to try to figure out, who am I? I had no idea. It took working the steps to figure out what I liked, like what colors I liked, because I spent so much of my life what do you think is a good color to like? Do you think red's a nice color? That's my favorite color, It was such all that people pleasing and all of that caring about what other people thought, that's where I got my worth. If you thought I was okay, then I must be okay. Didn't matter what I thought. I loved that when I came into OA, I learned if I want to have self-esteem, I have to do esteemable acts. And I didn't know what an esteemable act was. And I thought, okay, well, I'm nice to you. That's esteemable, right? That was about the deepest I could possibly get at that time. And I think probably that's why today I give so much service, in OA, because one, it saves my life, keeps me involved, keeps me, I love that metaphor about being in the plate, keeps me in the center of the plate, not on the outside of this paper plate that's getting ready to, one hit and it's going to fall off. Because I need to be in the center of this program. I went through this whole, my teenage years, my adolescence, and food was such a huge part of my story. But so were others. I am an addict at my core. I will pick up anything if I am not spiritually grounded, and if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, I will go to anything. But food was my number one drug, my first love, my first everything. But as I went through my teenage years, I went through all kinds of other stuff as well. It wasn't until I got a little bit older where that kind of stuff fell to the wayside and food came back with a vengeance. The first time I gained weight, visible weight. And it was so funny. I always had friends, close friends, that were these little tiny things. They were like 5'2", 100 pounds, and that's just who they were. They didn't have trouble with food. And that was just, their makeup. And I always, I always struggled, to keep my weight down. I was active. I ate a lot, but I was also active. And plus I have genes working in my favor. I do have good genes. And my food was restricted by my mom. And so I had those kind of things working in my favor as far as weight was concerned. But then when I hit 18, I got my first, taste of, I have my own job, I have my own car, I have my own money. And what did I go do? I went and bought all those foods that my mom said I couldn't have, that she restricted me with. And I didn't gain, my friends would complain about, I'm 3 pounds overweight. That's not me. That's not my story. It was like, oh my God, what happened? I would wake up one morning and I felt like the next day or 2 days later, it was like, oh my gosh, I think I gained 20 pounds. That can't be right. And, going back on the scale, off the scale, on the scale, off the scale, on the scale. Okay, yeah, I think I gained 20 pounds. And then, a week later, I gained 40 pounds. Next thing I knew, I was 50 pounds overweight at age, 19 or something, 18 or 19, around there. And the other thing that happened was I had my first car. And so I wasn't walking everywhere. And I still remember my boyfriend's sister said to me, Amy, you're getting car ass. And I was like, what? And she goes, yeah, ever since you got your car, you gained weight. How much weight have you gained? Oh my gosh, humiliating, this disease, a lot of us wear it. And it's like, I always thought I could hide it. I remember when we got married, I got married pretty young. I was 22 when we got married. My husband was in the Air Force. We moved to South Dakota. And before I got married, I lost 50 pounds, so I looked good in my wedding pictures. And we moved to South Dakota, and I thought, you know what? I'm cured. I don't have this problem anymore, you know, because I was in love, you know, we're in another part of the country, we're exploring, and food wasn't big for me then. And then I don't know, it's like the same thing when the first time I gained, you know, significant weight, it was like overnight, it's like, whoa, where did that come from? I got pregnant and had my first child at 24. I gained 90 pounds with that pregnancy. And I, that whole pregnancy was like a license to eat. And I used that to my full advantage. And oh, I just think about how ugly I was during that pregnancy, not physically, but emotionally, spiritually. I had no tools at my disposal, except for food. And so when I, you know, after the baby was born, of course, I wanted to lose the weight, but I was still heavy. And I remember we were at the mall, and, you know, we were new to the area, and my husband was so excited and happy for me, and he says, "Hun, they have a lean Brian here at this mall." And I was like, I wanted to kill him. I wanted to die. I wanted to go hide underneath the baby stroller, and I wanted to kill him. And he did not, he had no clue. He was like, "Oh my gosh, what did I say wrong?" You know, poor guy. And always trying to do the right thing. And I'm like, "I hate you." And he was like, he didn't know that Lane Bryant was a store for overweight, you know, big size, a big girl store. And, you know, when I told him, then he felt bad. He was like, "Oh, I'm sorry." He's like, "I was just trying to, I know that's where you shop." But you know what my head thought was, if he says this out loud and other people hear it, they're going to know I shop at the big girl store. Now, never mind that they could see me. And that's how sick my head is. You know, that is how sick my head is. You know, just that denial. And that's who I am at my core. You know, without working the steps, without coming here, without, you know, hearing this message and doing the work that this program requires, that's who I am. You know, just a big, fat sea of denial. I'm fine. And so, you know, that was, 24. I had my second son at 26. I gained, I think, 65 pounds with him. We moved over to Turkey. And I think the only reason I didn't gain all of the 90 with him was because I joined a water aerobics class. And I had a 18-month-old to run after. But the same thing. Food. And food in Turkey was very good. You know, it was even not that long ago, someone was asking me about, like, living in Turkey. Like, "Oh, my gosh, what was that like?" I'm like, "Well, the food was good." And it was. It was a hard time. You know, and then I think about, you know, all the experiences and things like that we've gone through. We have gone through a lot, my husband and I and my family. And I can look back on gentleness and say, yeah, it is no wonder that you eat. Like, if I didn't have food of some sort, I don't know how I would have gotten through emotionally without, you know, cracking. And so, you know, I believe that food did serve me for a while, and it just turned on me. And so that was, you know, 26. We moved back to the States. My husband got out of the military. That's when things went to a rapid decline. So from about age 28 to 32 was the worst and hardest years of my life. When I came into this program, I was spiritually bankrupt, I was bankrupt in so many ways. I was about to lose my job. I was about to lose my marriage. I was about to lose our car. You know, we were in dire financial straits because things had just spiraled completely out of control. In my life, in our lives. I think about my kids were 5 and 7 when I came in. And I think about what kind of mother I was with them. One of the things that really sticks out to me was what my husband always said was, leave mom alone, she doesn't feel well. Every day I didn't feel well. and, you know, my husband was a pretty big enabler for me, you know, and, as, you know, we were in this together. It really makes me sad to think what kind of mom I was to them. You know, I ignored them. I abused them physically, you know, yelled at them all the time. I just wanted them to leave me alone. I just wanted to eat in peace, and I didn't want to have to think. I didn't want to have to work. I just wanted life to be easy. Why couldn't things be easy? Well, life's not easy. And I had no tools to deal with anything that wasn't easy, was not equipped. And I can also remember the shame. By this time, I was really overweight. You know, when I came in, I was about 140 pounds or so more than what I weigh right now. And the shame that I walked around with, I can remember sitting in our the house that we lived in Delaware, and I was upstairs in my bedroom looking down. We had a park behind us, and my husband, he would take the kids out to play because I was too ashamed to go out there. We lived like in a military housing, so it was like houses all around, like a U-shape around the playground. And all I could think about was, what if someone looks out their window and sees me on the playground? I can't have anyone looking at me because I'm too fat. And I can remember like going places, like going to the library, driving there, sitting in my car, and too afraid and ashamed to get out of the car and not going into the library, turning around, going home, and my husband saying, "What happened? Yeah, I thought you were going to the library. Where's your books?" And I couldn't tell him. You know, I'm too ashamed to say this is what I did. I made up some lie. And so about a month or so before I came into program, I can still remember we lived in Northeast Philadelphia at the time. And, my life was just in shambles. My whole life was food, thinking about the food, eating the food, wishing I could stop eating the food and just not being able to. It was to the point that, you know, I would go to sleep thinking about the food. You know, I had something in the kitchen. Should I eat it now? If I eat it now, then tomorrow I can, you know, go on that diet. But if I don't eat it now, you know, like it's just that constant, what should I eat, should I not eat, should I eat, you know, just constant. And then, you know, going to sleep, waking up in the middle of the night, first thing I think about is that food. Should I go get that food? Maybe I should go get that food now. No, I'll wait and I'll have it. If I eat it now, then I won't have it tomorrow. But if I eat it now, then tomorrow I can go on a diet. You know, like just constant. And that consumed me. That was my life. You know, I couldn't think about anything else. And I got up out of bed that night, and I was at the window, and I was just crying, tears rolling down my face and saying, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? I cannot stop. Not only can I not stop eating the food, but I can't stop thinking about the food. Like, nobody, who does this? Something is really wrong with me. And just not having a clue. I have no idea. I had no idea about addiction. I was really clueless. But I knew my sister-in-law was in the program, and I didn't know anything about it. I thought, like, she went there, and there was, like, all these weird people there. I knew she went on retreats, and I was like, what in the world? What are you going to do on a retreat with other people with food? Like, I just did not get it. I remember going to her house for her family gathering, and she would leave for a meeting. I'm like, how rude is that? You know? And she ate like a very rigid food plan, and I would tell people that didn't even know her, listen to how my sister-in-law eats. You're not going to believe this, you know. And she was just weird. And I knew her before she went into OA, and it was like she got weird, you know. So I was like, oh, no way I'm going to do any of that. And so I went to her house. I was visiting her one day, and I had no intention of saying anything. Right before I left, I said, what do you do in OA? And, because there was a bunch of us, my sister and my couple of my other friends were getting ready to, they were talking about what diets they were going to go on. And I had already been on all of them, and I knew none of them were going to work for me, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And so I, you know, I said that to her, and she goes, "Well, I have a whole bunch of literature. Would you like, you know, to borrow some of it, and you can go home and read about it, and then, you know, we can talk about it." I was like, "Okay." So she went upstairs, she comes back down, and I swear she had that whole table of literature in her office. I was amazing. I was like, "Oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this?" So I went home and I read that weekend. The whole weekend, I stayed in bed, I read, and I cried. And I probably actually got abstinent that weekend because, you know, one of the books had food plan in there, and I started it, and I called her up on Sunday. She called me on Sunday and said, "You know, did you have a chance to read any of that?" I said, she had no idea. I said, "I need to go to a meeting." And she's like, "Okay, how about," it was like May something, and this was April 21st. And I said, "No, I need to go to a meeting tomorrow. I'm ready. I have to do this now, right now." And she goes, "Let me call you back." And she called me back in half an hour, and she goes, "There's a meeting tomorrow. Can you go?" I said, "Yeah." And so I went. I got abstinent. Then I started going to meetings where I lived over in Philadelphia. And I got a sponsor. A sponsor said, "Get a big book and call me. You know, get a food. Let's talk about your food plan." I already had my food plan, so that was good. I looked to see what were my killer foods, what were my poison foods. Took them out, stopped eating them, which I never ever thought I would be able to do. And I only ate at certain times. I didn't eat all day long. You know, like this graze thing. And that was a wild concept for me. Oh, meal times have a beginning and an ending, you know? And so, you know, that was a huge change for me, you know, to take out those, you know, to think that I wouldn't eat sugar, like, what? That was 95% of my diet. Well, what am I going to eat? I still have people that say that to me. "Well, what do you eat?" I eat well, you know? But, you know, the most important thing I think that I learned, you know, and especially in those early days was, you know, get that big book, work the steps, you know, and, you know, she put me right to work, reading, writing, talking about, you know, all of my character defects, talking about all of the people that bothered me and all of my resentments and what part did I have in that. You know, that was a wild, wild concept. Like, what? Like, no, all these other people did all these wrong things, and I was just a victim, you know. I was just cruising along on the highway of life, and they all screwed me over. And to look at what my part was, and to say, "Oh my gosh, I have a responsibility here." And to look at those character defects and say, "Okay, what are the corresponding assets? Could I possibly envision what that looks like and move towards that and have a God of my understanding help me get, you know, get to there rather than here." And then find a God of my understanding. I grew up in a very, very religious household. My parents were Southern Baptist. And so at a very early age, I rebelled against that and God and any kind of thought of that. But for some reason, when I came into OA, and, you know, I went home that night, you know, from my first meeting and my first weeks of meetings. And I first came in, I went to a meeting. You know, every day I was at a meeting. It was easy for me to go home, get on my knees and say, "God, help me. I have no idea what you look like. I have no idea what God is. I still have no idea. But I know that I have a God that works in my life today. You know, it's not the same God that my parents believe in, and that's okay. Only thing I know is that God keeps me abstinent, has kept me abstinent, and free from those obsessive thoughts that I was telling you about for years. You know, every diet I ever went on, I might have lost some weight, but I was never free of that obsession. You know, I was never free of, you know, being this ugly, insane person that talked about you behind your back the second I got a chance. You know, those guys didn't do that for me. I had no peace in my life, in my head. You know, today I have a peace. I have this wonderful, beautiful life. I have this, you know, my husband and I, we've been married for 21 years. Oh my gosh. Yesterday at work, I was a girl came in that we're kind of mentoring, and she was talking about, you know, this other job that she went to, and she was like, yeah, like, most of us are about my age, and then there's some older people, like 40s and stuff, and I was like, when did that happen? It happens fast. And so, you know, I've been married for 21 years. My kids are 19 and 17. I have this wonderful relationship with both of them, which I would not have had if I would have kept how I was going with beating them, screaming at them, ignoring them. You know, today, you know, my oldest son comes home from work. The first thing he does, he walks over to me and hugs me and says, "How was your day, Mom?" And he's been doing that for years. And I was like, what teenager does that? I didn't do that as a teenager, but, you know, I was sick. And it just, it warms my heart. You know, today, food is, I still like food. I'm a food addict. I still like food. I enjoy my food today, but food is not my life. I have my meal time that I get to enjoy my food, and then it's over. And, you know, I have a very rewarding job. I'm no longer worried about my car being repossessed. You know, waking up in the middle of the night, looking out the window, is the car still going to be there? You know, those are not the kind of thoughts that I have in my life today. Today, I think about, what can I do to help someone else? What does God want me to do today? You know, how do I align my will with my God today? No, those are the thoughts that I wake up with, and it's like, who am I? You know, but that is who I am today. And when I think about the girl that I was, it blows my mind to see the night and day difference. And it's all as a result of, you know, working the steps, coming in here, working the steps, finding a power greater than myself to turn my will and my life over to, getting clean, you know, putting down all of those foods that block me from having that relationship with the higher power, and continuing to do the work, you know, because I'm still an addict, I'm still a human being, you know, I'm still going to have character defects that are, I think, until the day I die. I mean, I'm never going to be perfect. I'm still going to have to live a life with all of everyone else. And surprise, surprise, I don't like everyone. They don't like me. I had a sponsor that told me, 1 in 3 people is not going to like you. Deal with it. I was like, what? I'm sure with me, the odds are different, you know. But, you know, but that also told me that I can't get my worth from other people. I have to get my worth from myself. And in order to do that, I have to do esteemable acts. I have to, you know, start my day with a higher power. Think about what my food plan is going to be. Think about what my God would have me do today. And then when I end my day, I think about, how did I do? How did I do today? You know? And I thank God for giving me another day abstinent. The other greatest thing too is I get to meet all of you wonderful people that are on this journey with me. I can say one thing about Unity, did I? The thing about Unity is like, how do we stay together? You know, the first tradition tells us, our personal recovery depends on OA unity. How do we stay unified? And unity does not have to mean uniformity. You know, like, we all have our own opinions. We don't always agree. Surprise, surprise. But we can accept, you know. And it's taught me such a mature way of handling life. I thought if you didn't agree with me, then we couldn't be friends. That was it. You're done, you know. And today I know there's a much different way to live. And I appreciate all of the other opinions and viewpoints. I'm grateful. That's, you know, for me, it's like just that feeling of, I just feel grateful. I feel happy. I feel joyous, and I feel free. Thanks for letting me share.